Good morning, Lynn, and everyone. But Lynn caught my attention because she's crying. So good morning, everyone. Yeah, it was a sweet song. Welcome to our Sunday morning weekly gathering. I'm very, very happy to see you all here. It's a beautiful morning. I am going to play our opening song, at least a portion of it, Awakening by Deva Premal and Mitten. So please, everyone, enjoy this opportunity to greet one another. Morning, everyone. It's wonderful reading about where you are and the weather, and it's just great fun to see that we're all over the place, you know, yet we're here together. Yay for internet churches. That's wonderful, don't you think? Yay. And we're very together in the heart, right? Very, very, very together. So nice that we're able to have this internet church. Well, let me start with our statement of purpose, just in case there's anybody here that isn't quite familiar with who Awakening Together is. We are a universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways that we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases. We want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. Our common purpose is awakening to one true self. Those are the words that we use, one true self. But some of the other words that are used for the same thing are the Absolute. Jesus called it the Kingdom of God or the Kingdom of Heaven. Buddha called it nirvana. Eastern teachers often call it manonassa. And it's known by other names, including no self. Imagine that. One true self and no self are absolutely synonymous. Maybe the best name for it is the nameless, right? The nameless. But we accept this one true self or no self or one absolute truth, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We accept it as the only truth. Therefore, we live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Now, we have a lot of announcements today. It's amazing. I think last week there were hardly any, and this week we have a lot. So many you might even want to grab a paper and pencil. You might want to write some of these down. There's some important announcements here, too. Let's start with what's happening tonight. Here in the Awakening Together Sanctuary, tonight at 7:30 Eastern Time, which is 4:30 Pacific, we have our third Sunday satsang. And our satsang tonight is with John Sherman. If you don't know John Sherman, he has an interesting character life. He was a bank robber. And he was caught. And he escaped from prison once. It seems to me like, if I remember correctly, he was out for 2 to 2.5 years. It took a long time for them to catch him. And then he was put back in prison. In fact, he was put in federal prison the second time, and he escaped from prison again. Maybe that was the time he was out 2 or 2.5 years. I don't remember which time he was out for a long time, but one of the two times that he escaped, he was out for a long time before they caught him. But they caught him again, and he ended up spending many, many years in prison as a result, of course, being a bank robber and a prison escapee. You can imagine he spent some time in prison. But while in prison, he met Gangaji because she had a prison ministry. And he also met some Buddhists from Colorado when he was in a Colorado prison, who also had a prison ministry. And he got on the spiritual path. And at some point, he became very disillusioned by Gangaji specifically. And that caused him to just go within himself. And he had a lot of time on his hands in prison. So he had a lot of time to go deeply within himself. And that's as much of the story as I'll tell for now. I think that the rest of this you can come tonight and hear directly from John Sherman. But a very interesting character. He would not call himself a spiritual teacher, although many others would. So tonight, 7:30, satsang with John Sherman. And then immediately following that, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight, 6 p.m. Pacific, we have a new mini-series beginning with Bruce Rawls. The name of his mini-series is Not No, Turning Up the Volume on Our Inner Kindness Teacher's Gentle Mindfulness, which is kind of interesting. We have the word inner. We have the word kindness. We have the word teacher, which means there's something there to listen to. We have the word gentle. And we have the word mindfulness, as well as the whole title starting with not no. So I guess we are not saying no to the inner. We are not saying no to the kindness. We're not saying no to the teacher. We're not saying no to the gentleness. And we're not saying no to the mindfulness. But in order to find out exactly what Bruce means by that title, you'll need to show up for his mini-series. His mini-series is going to be 3 weeks long, starting tonight at 9 p.m. And remember that there is a special donate option in order to help support our mini-series teachers. And we do appreciate those donations, and 100% of the donations are passed on to them, minus the PayPal fees. Awakening Together does not keep any of that money. Also, I want to remind you that next Sunday night, at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, will be our monthly movie discussion group. And this month's movie is called Hate Ship, Love Ship. So if you haven't watched the movie yet and you want to participate in next week's discussion group, you still have a week to watch the movie. Or if you're like me and you watched it, I haven't watched it. But if I had watched it, I would have already forgotten it. I'd need to watch it again in the last week. So if you're like me and you forget, you have a chance to watch it the second time this week. Hate Ship, Love Ship. The movie description says, a wild teenage girl orchestrates a romance between her nanny and her father, who is a recovering addict. So, that's next week at 8. You got this week to watch the movie. Now, this next announcement, I need to go ding, 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 ding. Really, everybody pay attention, because this is really very important. Very important. Awakening Together Sanctuary is moving. We are moving. 2 weeks from today, Sunday, May 1st, you will no longer find the sanctuary here. All right, so we are still going to be in Pal Talk, but there has been a technical error with this room, which does not allow us to stay with this room. All rooms in Pal Talk are owned by a Pal Talk handle. This room was owned by a handle called ACIMER, which used to be Doves, and he turned that over to Awakening Together a few years ago. But that handle somehow was inadvertently deleted, which means we don't have the ability to manage this room fully like we need to. So we need to create a new room. And we decided instead of putting the room in Pal Talk under Education Other, which is where it's always been, the new room will still be in Pal Talk, but it will be under Religion and Spirituality. So 2 weeks from today, Sunday, May 1, you will need to go to the new room, and if you follow this room, that follow link will no longer work, so you'll need to create a new follow link for the new room. We will be saying this over and over and over again. Lynn will be announcing it over and over again in the sanctuary. We will put out communications on the website that will come out on the daily updates. We'll announce it next Sunday as well. But it's also helpful if you guys spread the word. Because we are moving. It's just like we're moving out of one building to another building. If you come to this building in 2 weeks, it's going to be empty. Start packing 2 weeks from today, Sunday, May 1st. I'm not sure what your question means, Cheryl. Cheryl says, new links we can share. You mean a link to the new room, maybe? Lynn says, not yet. So, all right. We have to go. We've created a whole new room. Yeah, a whole new room. But it will be the Awakening Together Sanctuary. I think right now it's called AT Sanctuary as a placeholder. But I'm pretty sure Lynn will probably rename it Awakening Together Sanctuary once we close this room down. All right, the next announcement is also important. The next announcement is that the 2016 Awakening Together Fall Retreat is now open for registration. Once again, just like last year, this year there are going to be 3 retreats, and you can sign up for 1, 2, or all 3 retreats. The first retreat will be Regina Dawn Acres. That will begin on Sunday, October 3rd. And run until Thursday, October 27th. And the name of that retreat is Fine Tune Your Awakening Skills. The description of the retreat is this: sharpen meditation, contemplation, inquiry, journaling, and mind watching skills in this less talk, more practice retreat. And that is exactly my intention. We are just going to really sharpen all of those skills so that when we go away from the retreat, everybody will feel much more confident at home in their individual spiritual practice. And that's the 23rd to the 27th. Yeah. The 3rd to the 27th would really be deep, wouldn't it? No, this is Sunday the 23rd to Thursday the 27th of October. And then on Friday, October 28th, there will be a one-day retreat with Brent Haskell. And the name of his retreat is Faith Without Works, or How Does Faith Work? And so please consider taking advantage of this rare opportunity to interact with Brent Haskell. We did just have him at the winter retreat. He has also agreed to do this retreat. But if you know anything about Brent Haskell, he's not going to be joining the circuit, I don't think. He's not going to be at lots of other retreats all over the country. So please consider taking this opportunity if you enjoy Brent Haskell. He, of course, is the scribe of Journey Beyond Words and The Other Voice. So if you enjoy Brent Haskell, consider coming on Friday, October 28th for a one-day retreat with him. His retreat will end at 3 p.m. on Friday, and then that evening at 6 p.m. a new retreat begins with John Mark Stroud. And that retreat will be October 28th to October 30th. And the name of his retreat is Living in the Light Play Shop. And he is a very experiential teacher. Here's his description. Through laughter and dialogue with one who wakes, embrace the ability to see behind the veil to the Christ mind. And many of us had the pleasure to get to know John Mark Stroud in Las Vegas last weekend. I will tell you that he and I met for lunch on Friday, and I was walking down the hallway to go and find him, and he had come up the hallway to find me, so we kind of ran into each other, and the instant we saw each other, there was this incredible recognition, so much so that we didn't even say hi. It was like we'd been together forever, and we just started talking, so where do you want to go eat? And then we both, as we walked down the hall a little bit towards the restaurant, we both kind of commented on that. He actually commented on it first, that instant deep like we'd always known each other recognition. I said, I noticed it too. I said, we didn't even say hi to each other. It's like we'd never been apart. And it was my first time meeting him. So, and I think Lynn also said she had an experience with John Mark Stroud. And I think Dove also met him and loved him. So he comes highly recommended by those of us who spent some time with him in Las Vegas. So please consider coming to the John Mark Stroud retreat as well. So all three retreats, if you're coming for all three, the dates are October 23rd to October 30th. And this year we are offering early bird pricing. If you pay in full by August 15th, you do get early bird pricing on all three retreats. We're also offering payment options for people who want to maybe make a payment weekly or make a payment monthly until they are paid up. So go check this out. There are lots and lots of pages for you to look at about the retreat, the pricing options, the location, shuttle services, etc. It all starts at the Awakening Together website under the events menu. It also came out today on the daily update. And of course, you'll be hearing a lot more about that between now and October. So that concludes the announcements, but a lot of announcements today, a lot of really important announcements. So let me start our opening song. This is one of my favorite songs, actually. It's by Stephen Walters, and it's called Nothing Less Than Everything.
I was walking down a lonely road, looking for a place to rest. There was no escaping from this ache inside my chest. Then I got down on my knees and begged for mercy, and I raised up my head. I knew the answer, even as I asked the question, just how much this love demands. it's everything, nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burned, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mama.
Let's go into our opening prayer. I will start with silence until the prayer begins to come. Len is crying again. All right, let's go into silence. The heart opens and invites us to listen today with the ears of the heart, today's message, just like the song we just heard, is going to communicate that if we really want to awaken to one true self, awakening must be our only desire. And not only that, it must be a very, very strong desire, a longing, as Nisargadatta called it. The head, it doesn't like these messages. It immediately thinks of so many other things that are important and says, what about this and this and this? But the heart knows. And so we listen with the heart today. And we let this message work on us in whatever way the message will. Amen. So our reading today, it's actually an excerpt from an article I wrote about a week and a half ago For those of you who don't know, on Wednesday, April 6th, I spent the day with Michael Langford. Michael Langford is the author of The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, which many of you are familiar with. Living a Life That Knows Only Love, which Jay referred to last week during the Sunday service. The Seven Steps to Awakening, which I share from every Sunday night right here in the sanctuary. And many other books that are useful to awakening. And he is a bit of a recluse. In fact, I think I'm only the third person to have ever met him. But I did spend the day with him a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago, and the next morning, Thursday morning, while it was still very fresh in my mind, I wrote an article based on that experience. And so today the reading is an excerpt from that article, My Day with Michael Langford. And Reverend Francine Wright is going to be our reader. So Francine, I am turning the mic over to you.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me? Wonderful. Excerpt from My Day with Michael Langford by Regina Dawn Akers. It is very important that we catch the ego in its ego preservation strategy. It is also very important that we doubt our thoughts, especially since the vast majority of them are lies. Even spiritual thoughts are usually lies. As Michael puts it, the ego mind lies to its imaginary self from the time it wakes up in the morning until it goes to sleep at night. With that in mind, many of my questions were related to exposing these ego lies. I wanted examples, specific examples. However, each time I began to ask a question about specific examples, Michael reminded me that we cannot list all the ways the ego mind will lie to its imaginary self. If we list a dozen, or 100 or 1,000 ways the ego can lie to the imaginary self, the ego will just create millions of other ways to lie that we have not listed. It may seem impossible to catch the ego in its ego preservation strategy if the ego can create millions of new preservation strategies each time we discover 5 or 10 of those strategies. However, Michael does have one answer that is more powerful than all of the millions of ego preservation strategies. This one answer will enable us to see through all of the ego's preservation strategies. As quickly as the ego creates them, we can see through them with this one answer. The answer, which Michael calls the most important key, is the awakening of the extremely intense desire for manonastha. Manonastha means mind death. Mind death is the equivalent of ego death, which is the equivalent of awakening. Michael prefers the term manonastha because it is more specific than the term awakening. You can hear the conversation about the use of the terms awakening and manonastha on the second formal audio from yesterday's conversation. So it's not yesterday anymore, but whenever we do know that with Michael. You will also hear Michael's reasons for why humans should want desire manonastha. However, you won't hear Michael express in animated detail how important the extremely intense desire for manonastha is. This came up over and over again in the informal conversation. In fact, The extremely intense desire for Mananasa was the answer to the majority of the questions I asked. I mentioned to Michael that when I speak to the of the desire for truth or awakening, some spiritual people make comments about letting go of all desires. I didn't go into great detail, but sometimes I have to muster courage to speak about increasing the desire for truth, because as I speak, people are typing comments about how awakening is here now and desire projects awakening into the future, or that we are all already awake, or they type some other comments that indicate I am wrong about cultivating an extremely intense desire for awakening. However, my discernment knows that the ones who are typing these comments are using spiritual ideas to preserve the ego. If they look deeply at themselves, their comments, and their underlying motivation for typing those comments, they would see it too. Anyway, in an informal conversation about desire, Michael shared this illustration with me. Imagine that all human desires are logs, like the logs you put on a fire. Each desire is represented by one log. There are many, many logs because there are many, many desires. However, there is one log that is different than all of the other logs. This log is the extremely intense desire for Mananasa. This log is different because it is lit. It is burning. And when you place this log with all of the other logs, it lights them on fire and bursts them up. So although the extremely intense desire for Mananasa is a desire, it is different than all of the other desires because all other desires burn up in this one. I love this answer. Michael had wonderful answers for everything I asked him. However, the primary answer I came away with is that I do not need to ask Michael anything. My mind and yours can continue to come up with questions ad nauseam. Michael would eventually just get up and walk away from us to make a sandwich because he doesn't want to help us preserve the ego by playing the game of question and answer with us. As he pointed out to me, if we find out how we can increase our own extremely intense desire for Mananasa, it will bring everything else to us. It will give us the eyes to see the ego's tricks. It will give us internal answers to our questions. It will help us stop wasting time so we can spend more time in meaningful spiritual practice. That desire will do it all. That desire is the answer to all questions. Of course, my own book, from my own inner teacher, says that too. NTR Galatians calls it willingness. But it is very clear when it says, focus on your willingness as if it is your truth, because it is. Focus on your willingness as if it holds the answer to all questions, because it does. Focus on your willingness as if it is everything to everyone, because it is. Focus on your own willingness, that is love alive within the world. In his book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, Michael writes, of all the factors that determine if you will or will not be free, the intensity or lack of intensity of your desire for liberation is the most essential factor. Whatever you can do to most effectively increase your desire for liberation should be done. All obstacles that appear in your journey to freedom are caused by too little desire for freedom. As your desire for freedom grows in intensity, the ego creates fewer obstacles. When your desire for freedom becomes very intense. Your desire for freedom demands that you take no detours. When your desire for freedom becomes extremely intense, for the first time, you can see what is essential for freedom and what is not essential. When your desire for freedom is weak, the ego does not allow you to see its preservation strategy. When the desire for freedom is stronger, you can begin to see the ego's preservation strategy. When the desire for freedom becomes even stronger, the desire for freedom itself will bring you everything you need to succeed in your quest for liberation, including the answer to all your questions, the direct path teachings, the solution to all obstacles, the motivation to practice, etc. In Michael's autobiography, Manonasta, Michael writes, "The awakening of the extremely intense desire for Manonasta is the most important key to attaining Manonasta. The awakening of the extremely intense desire for Manonasta is like the light of the sun. Other keys to Manonasta are only like the light of a light bulb compared to it. The awakening of the extremely intense desire for Manonasta is everything. It is the totality. The extremely intense desire for Manonasta will bring everything that is needed. The extremely intense desire for Manonasta will bring extremely intense self-honesty. The extremely intense desire for Manonasta will make you drop all of your unnecessary activities, and it will make you devote all of the free time thus created to practice the most rapid and direct means to Manonasta." I showed Michael how I had highlighted, circled, and starred that paragraph in my copy of his autobiography. He said, "The most important part of that paragraph is, the awakening of the extremely intense desire for Manonasta is like the light of the sun, and all other keys to Manonasta are only like the light of a light bulb compared to it." That's it. I release the mic.
Thank you very much, Francine. And when I post the audio from this morning's service, I will post that reading along with it for anyone who wants to read it and contemplate it themselves. Before I continue, I want to read something else to you. This is actually a post that David Hempel made in Facebook the other day in Sharing and Contemplation Together. First, he wrote something about himself, but he ended with this. "This makes me think of a story I heard about a person stuck in a hole. The doctors threw painkillers into the hole, but they didn't get him out because they only made him numb. A personal trainer motivated him to come out of the hole, but even with all of the training and effort he gave, he couldn't get out alone. A therapist came to the hole and asked him how he felt about the hole, and he worked with him to get his needs met in the hole, but he still couldn't get out of the hole. A priest came by and gave prayer to the man in the hole. He taught him about hope, and he taught the man to forgive the hole, to pray to God about the hole, but he never helped him out. A teacher came by and taught the man about holes, about shovels, and about digging, but the man couldn't get out of the hole. But one day, a recovering hole addict came into the hole and saw that the man needed help. To the man's surprise, the recovering addict jumped into the hole and said, 'Don't worry, I've been here before, and I know how we can get out.'" The reason I brought that story is because when I met Michael, my feeling was that I was talking to someone who absolutely knew from direct experience, first of all, what out of the whole really is, but also how to get out of the whole. One of the words that Francine used as she was reading, which of course is because I used it, which is of course because Michael used it, is the word Manonasa. And I think I kind of remember Jay referring to Manonasa recently. I don't know when, but I remember him typing that it means mind annihilation. It also means mind death. These are the two most common definitions. That would be the equivalent of ego death. That would be the equivalent of passing through the eye of the needle or the final doorway. That would be the equivalent of the ultimate awakening or the final awakening, meaning that there may be other awakenings that precede that, at least for some people. One of the things I told Michael is that I asked a couple of spiritual teachers if they had passed through that eye of the needle, if they had experienced that final awakening. One of those teachers was Jan Frazier and the other was Bentinho Massaro. Both of them, they were our spiritual teachers at our fall retreat last year. And I directly asked each of them that question. And they each responded no, which I loved. I love honesty. They each responded no. And there's a wonderful YouTube video. It's only 4 or 5 minutes long. It's called The Final Doorway. It's by Dr. David Hawkins, where he describes his experience of passing through that eye of the needle or his experience of ego death. It's a wonderful audio. If you haven't heard it, it's great to listen to. If you have heard it, it's actually great to listen to again because the mind forgets things. When I was with Michael, I asked him in a very clumsy way because I pointed at the body and said, have you? And I knew the minute I was pointing at a body and asking, have you, I was making a mistake. But I asked him if he had awakened, if he had attained Manonasa, however you want to word this. And his answer was yes. And I found in my day with him no reason to doubt him. No reason at all. In fact, I've been with a lot of spiritual teachers, and this was the first time that I felt that I was listening to someone who really knew from direct experience, not from reading books or even from listening to an inner teacher describing it, but someone who had been there, who is there. Therefore, when he says this is the way to get out of the hole, my feeling is listen. And it's kind of interesting in David's little story here, which Dolores said that's his sponsor. So maybe this is a 12-step story. I don't know. But what's interesting about the story is that it says that the recovering addict, which I called a recovering hole addict to make it fit with the story, that the recovering addict jumped into the hole and said, don't worry, I've been here before and I know how we can get out. I felt that that is the reason there's a body in the world that we can point to, a body in the world that we can talk to, that can give us this very, very good advice. You know, it's very, very popular for people to say things like, if you have a body, then that means that you still have work to do. And If I listen to that with complete faith and belief, that means that every teacher that has a body, I'm going to take what they say with a grain of salt, because a part of my mind is going to say they don't really know. Michael told me another story. Actually, this is in his autobiography. And his autobiography is not out yet. It should be out in May. I had an advance copy. But this story is in the autobiography. The story is about a conscious living movie screen. And that conscious living movie screen is, of course, the symbol of the one true self. And there's a movie projected onto that movie screen by the mind, by the ego. And it has many characters and it has many things going on. And the movie screen itself is not at all confused about what it is or what the movie is. You know, the movie screen's very clear. I'm a movie screen. That would be the equivalent of I am consciousness, right? But when one of the characters lets go of the ego, lets go of the belief I am the person, that creates what we could call an empty vessel. And the movie screen then has the ability to talk into the movie to the other characters through that empty vessel. And the other characters think it's another person talking, because person is all they know. But it's actually consciousness talking through an empty vessel. Therefore, the fact that we see a body does not mean that there's more work to be done. We have to use our own discernment to know if we are getting perfectly good advice or not. And again, my feeling on this day with Michael was that I was getting perfectly good advice. Perfectly good advice. And so the best thing for me to do was not only to listen, but to embrace the advice. Another teaching that I do here on the sanctuary on Wednesdays is called The Guiding Light. And what I do is I read from the Bible, from the book of John, and allow a live, spontaneous interpretation to come through. And there's a story in the book of John. Jesus had, according to the Bible, Jesus had 70 followers. And by followers, what the Bible really means, that these are people who left their homes, left their jobs, and went with Jesus anywhere that he went. And I also think, although I don't know this for a fact, I actually think when the Bible says he had 70 followers, it was only referring to the men. I don't think they counted the women or the children that might have also, been in that crowd. They only counted the men. So the Bible says that Jesus had 70 followers, and it may have been significantly more, people who followed him everywhere, until one day. One day when he gave a specific talk, all of his followers except the 12, and again, I think it's only referring to the men, so there may have been the 12 and some women, like Mary Magdalene. But according to the Bible, all of the followers except the 12 left him. They said, this is a very hard message. The message that Jesus gave that day was when he asked his listeners to eat my body and drink my blood. And this was long before the Last Supper. This was just a talk somewhere in the area of the Sea of Galilee, standing in a field somewhere. He asked his followers to eat my body and drink my blood. And he told them, this is how you will inherit the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven, whichever term he used that day. And they shook their heads and said, this is a hard message. And they left him. Well, the spontaneous interpretation that came through me that day when I read it in the guiding light was that they were mistaking Jesus for a body, which is the mistake we make, right? They see a body. They were mistaking Jesus for a body. What was speaking was not a body, was not a man, was not even what we would call Jesus. It was the living, conscious movie screen. It was the message itself speaking. The message itself saying, devour me. Take me in completely. That is how you will inherit the kingdom of God. The message itself saying, devour me. Take me in completely. That is how you will inherit the kingdom of God. That feeling of devour me, take me in completely, is the feeling that I had when I was with Michael. Listen to this message, not only with your ears, but with every cell in your being. And take it in completely. Do not let your mind say, well, that's not important for me. Right? In David's story, the recovering addict jumps into the hole and says, don't worry, I've been here before. I know how we can get out. I've been here before. I know how we can get out. If you want out, what do you say? Okay, I'll follow some of your instructions, some of the instructions that really suit me, I'll follow, but some of them, maybe I won't. Are you going to get out of the hole that way? No. Not if you really want out of that hole. Not if you're really tired of being in that hole. Not if you really want to see what's up above, outside of the hole. You're going to follow every instruction to the T. And the most important instruction that Michael gave. He said the most essential key is your desire for manonessa, mind death, ego death. He says that key is everything. That key will bring the intense self-honesty. That key will allow you to see all of the ego's tricks. That key will, guide you to the teachers that are best to listen to. And if that teacher happens to be not 100%, that key will even let you know which sentences to disregard. Like you listen to 90% and disregard 10 because that key knows. That key will lead you to drop all unnecessary activities and spend all your time in practice. That key will even teach you what practice is and teach you how to practice. When I walked away from my day with Michael, a shift had occurred in me. A shift that now, a week and a half later, is still firmly in place. I call it a shift because it wasn't there before. And now it is. And the shift was a certainty. That if I follow these instructions, I will awaken. And you know what? Jesus says that in the book of John too. He tells them in the book of John that if you do what I say, you will not taste death. He doesn't say maybe. Maybe if you do what I say, you'll awaken. Some of the people who do what I say awaken. He doesn't say that. Nor does he say, if you do some of what I say, you will awaken. If you choose one or two of the things I say, well, you're awake. And he doesn't say that either. Jesus says, if you do what I say, you will not taste death. Period. I walked away from my day with Michael Langford with that certainty. I walked away with an absolute certainty. This is my choice. I can follow these instructions or not follow these instructions. And if I choose not to follow them, if I say other things are more important for me, or I don't have time for that, or whatever, 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 or the wonderful story, I can't awaken. Right? That's a wonderful story. I can't. If I listen to anything else and I choose for any reason, it doesn't matter what the reason is, if I choose for any reason not to follow the instructions, then I am also choosing not to awaken. If I choose to only follow some of the instructions, I am choosing not to awaken. If I choose to follow all of the instructions, but only some of the time, right? You cannot be fully committed part of the time, right? If I choose to follow all of the instructions, but only some of the time, I will not awaken. But if I listen to what he says, which is actually quite simple, and I do what he says, I will awaken. Simple. And since this shift has occurred in me, I'll call it the shift of certainty, the way I see has changed, which is why I call it a shift. I see things that are a waste of time that I did not see as a waste of time 2 weeks ago. Some of you may have heard, I quit leading the Sufi group. I quit leading the Sufi group because for me that was a waste of time. There may be other things that I quit. I don't know that yet. And there may be new things that I begin to do. But I have a new detector. It's like a natural detector in me that can detect the difference between waste of time and necessary activity. And there are necessary activities. There are, right? But my sharpness on knowing the difference is 1,000 times sharper than it was 2 weeks ago. And that comes from the certainty. And Michael said, where is my article? And you guys all know this. If you know Michael Langford, you know this. It's not like the first time he said it. Michael said, the awakening of the extremely intense desire for Manonasa is the most important key. The most important key to attaining Manonasa. The awakening of the extremely intense desire for Manonasa is like the light of the sun. And all other keys to Manonasa are only like the light of a light bulb compared to it. So it doesn't mean that there aren't other keys. But without the light of the sun, we don't have that keen discernment. Without the light of the sun, we won't be perfectly self-honest. Without the light of the sun, we won't know the difference between a necessary activity and an unnecessary activity. Without the light of the sun, we won't see all of the ego's tricks, just some of the ego's tricks. The light of the sun is critical. It is so much brighter than a light bulb. Now, Lynn is making a comment, not because there is something to attain, it is already here. And that's true, and when we release the audios, by the way, we'll be releasing the audios, we'll play the first audio on May, let's see, we said, I forget the dates, I think the first audio is May 8th, is that right, Lynn? I forgot the dates. Lynn probably knows. Or here, I have them written down. May 1st and May 8th at 8 p.m. May 1st and May 8th, we'll play the two audios here in the sanctuary at 8 p.m. And you'll hear him talk about the fact that it's already here. In fact, what he says is, the purpose of spiritual practice has never been to become the true self because you already are the true self. He says the purpose of spiritual practice is to remove the illusion. That's the same thing the Course says, right? That you cannot, the purpose of, well, I forget the exact words, but the idea is you cannot attain or acquire love. That's not your job. Your job is to find and remove all of the blocks to love, right? He says the same thing in different words. But he also tells us that when we do not allow the extremely intense desire to flower in us because we're saying things like, we're all already awake, or I already am the true self, or whatever, that's an ego trick that keeps us in illusion. In fact, he says that spiritual students are very good at lying to themselves. I think I'll just stop there. So what I'll do next is I'll play our song for contemplation of today's message. And also, if you want to, you can donate to Awakening Together. Barb will provide that link. And then after the contemplation, we'll hear what you all have to say. So today's song is Audrey Assad, I Shall Not Want. Lovely song. Thank you to Nikki Dobson for introducing me to that song. Also, I just want to say that I have created a new page on my website, reginadonacres.com. It's under the Classics menu, and it's called Recommended Teachers. And I only have two teachers there, Michael Langford and Ellie Ruzdar. And one person at least has already noticed this page. And Lisa, she sent me an email and asked, why did I recommend those two? And my answer was, because there are no distractions in their teaching. At least that's how I discern it. All right, Jacqueline, the mic is yours.
Good morning. I trust you can hear me. Good. thank you for your teaching this morning. Regina, it occurs to me that, let me say that I really liked the story of the David Hemphill story of the hole. That's a great story, but it occurs to me that there's something missing in that story that's important to the journey. And that is that, you know, when you talk about a hole, you automatically assume that that's someplace that you don't want to be. Mm. And some of us are stuck in the hole. Most of us, I think, are stuck in the hole because it's a cool place. You know, I got all my comfy sofa here and my video games and, you know, whatever it is, right? Whatever makes this a great place to be. And that, you know, the first step on this journey is, and journey's a bad word, but the first step is realizing that this hole is not someplace that I want to stay. I mean, that's the very first step. And some of us, you know, and I remember reading on the most rapid and direct means to eternal bliss, Langford's book, you know, about part of increasing this desire is to like focus on all the awful things that are happening in the world, right? As a means of increasing the desire. And that seemed at the time to be a really weird teaching. but I think it's important because, you know, probably the biggest trick of the ego is to convince you that, you know, you're already in a great place, that this hole's a fabulous place to be. Why would I want to leave? That's what occurs to me. So, you know, so, and then I cling to, you know, I'm like, wow, why would I want to do what Regina's talking about? You know, she's like talking about cutting out things that, you know, well, what if I want to go have a beer with my sister? What if I want to go play golf? What if I, you know, she's talking about cutting out all these quote unquote unnecessary things. I like these things. Why would I cut them out? So I just, you know, these are the thoughts that went through my mind. So anyway, I'm done. Thanks so much for listening to your voice. I like the mic.
Yeah, and let me just say one thing a little different, Jacqueline. And by the way, Michael Langford did this to me all day. He corrected me all day long, which is a part of what led to the shift. I did not say that I was asking people to give up things they want to give up. I said I was asking people to increase their desire for awakening. As your desire for awakening increases, the desire for unnecessary activity naturally decreases. Then you are not letting go of things you want to do. You're letting go of things you no longer want to do. That's a completely different message. So instead of letting go of things you want to do, yeah, Michael did that to me all day long, Jacqueline. He corrected me. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful corrections. Instead of letting go of things you want to do, just focus on increasing your desire to awaken, right? That's the message. Let everything else take care of itself naturally because that desire takes care of everything. Gloria, the mic is yours. Okay. Whoops. Okay, Gloria, we're not hearing anything. So what I'm going to do is pass the mic to Dolores, who had her hand up. And then, Gloria, if you figure out what was wrong, put your hand back up. Dolores first, though. Dolores, the mic is yours.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Regina. I had put my hand down because I chickened out. But I can relate it to the 12 steps. When I said about the sponsor getting in the hole, usually, I mean, the format in the 12 steps is that you get a sponsor, and they're the point person that you go to help you out of the addiction hole. But I can totally relate to what you're saying. And one of the things they say in Narcotics Anonymous is another suffering addict, a recovering addict, is the ultimate weapon to help you decrease your desire for mind and mood altering substances. But I can attest to the fact that since I've been in the 12 step program and even coming to Awakening Together, but in 12 steps, my desire decreased as my desire increased for a sober mind. My desires decreased for hanging out in the clubs, being with people that do that, and so I can take that, what your sermon this morning about increasing your desire for mannosis, and relate it to what has happened to me in the 12 steps, is the more that I focused on being clean and sober, the less I wanted to use mood-altering substances. So thank you so much for your message this morning.
Thank you very much, Dolores. That was an excellent an example. And Gloria, do you want to try it again? Okay, maybe not. So so what I'm going to do now then... Oh, wait, there's Jay. Jay, the mic is yours.
Thanks, Regina. Yeah, what I found was a willingness that has cropped up stronger in me in the recent weeks, like addressing some of the thoughts that Jackie had brought up about, you know, your willingness and your desire to want to be free from the hold, as you call it. And I think that we each have different points. We become willing, right? Like sometimes it wells up within you for some reason that you can't explain. You know, looking at humanity as a whole, all of us practicing spiritual practices, raises the collective fire, etc., sparks into whoever, or, you know, if somebody has a great difficulty, it can be sparked within you, or your life is going really great and you just spark right into that willingness. I think it happens, you know, at different times with different people. I'm just really grateful right now for what I'm experiencing, and I don't quite know why I'm experiencing it, and I don't know if I need to know why. But there's a very, very tangible shift in me regarding willingness and pull, yearning for inner experience again. And so I'm just grateful for that. So giving up the mic.
Yeah, thank you. And to use Dolores's example, you know, maybe this shift is like the shift where, you know, we think we can never quit the alcohol. We think we can never quit the drugs. You know, we just can't. You know, we're not weak enough. I mean, we're not strong enough or whatever. And then one day the certainty comes that we can. And that's a whole new starting point, right? But it's up to me, and being aware that it's up to me. Gloria, the mic is yours.
Okay, are you able to hear me now? Awesome, awesome, awesome. I don't know what's going on with my mic lately, but it has been kind of finicky. But I just wanted to come on and, first of all, good morning. And that was an awesome teaching this morning. I know for me, these past probably several weeks, so many major upheavals, you know, things are just coming up left and right, and I totally get what's happening here. But the one thing I wanted to comment on as it relates to Regina's teaching today was I had mentioned recently, I've recently started writing again in the blog and posting some articles on a monthly basis at a kind of an online connection site we have with my employer where we're able to do that. So I was really inspired, and I have been posting these blogs the beginning, the first or second Monday of the month, January, February, and March. April comes around, and there's no inspiration to write. I don't get it because I was really having fun, I guess, with the writing, expressing myself in that manner, and there's no inspiration to write. So recently, about a week ago, I would say, I had the thought, you know, why would that have just fallen away on its own in that way? And the teaching that just naturally came to me after that was pointing in this direction of what's being taught today. So it kind of came full circle today that I'm understanding, and even what Jacqueline commented on, at first about not even knowing that we're in this hole. There's this natural falling away. There's no effort. I didn't have to look at my writing and say, oh, I think this needs to go now because I need to be focused on something else or in another way. There was absolutely no conversation that took place within me to cause that to fall away. It fell away on its own. For whatever reason, I don't know if it would have been a distraction for other things that I'm more intensely focused on now, which is this awakening, which is, as a matter of fact, this morning I was meditating just prior to the teaching today, and the one sentence that came forward was, the journey is inward. This whole journey, everything out there, none of that matters. Nothing outside of me. As a matter of fact, there is nothing outside of me. The whole journey is an inward journey. And this huge light came on for me this morning when I was in meditation that this whole thing is inward. There's nothing going on outside of me, no matter what it looks like. And so these things that are naturally falling away, naturally things that I thought I was quote unquote being helpful with. Imagine that, you know? They're falling away naturally. So I just wanted to add that little 2 cents to the pot this morning, and I'll let go of the mic. Thank you.
Thank you, Gloria. I'm happy that we got to hear you. And by the way, Gloria is our new first Sunday minister. And so since we are moving to the new Awakening Together Sanctuary under the Religion and Spirituality section of Pal Talk on May 1, Gloria will give our first homily or sermon or talk on Sunday morning in the new sanctuary. And Sharon, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Regina. What I want to know is the way you describe Michael. Would you say that Eckhart Tolle and Byron Katie are in that place where they went through the eye of the needle? And I don't think you know that because you didn't ask them. But when I read Byron Katie, it seems as though, you know, and even Adishanti, it just seems to me when I get that feeling of awakening that they truly are awake. And what does Michael see, like his vision? Does he see no world? Because when I read Nisargadatta, he was seeing no world. So I'm confused a little bit on, you know, the images in our mind, of course, are images. However, do they disappear? And is the ego death like something that he never hears anymore? I just don't know. I mean, like, I am open to, you know, just learning about all this because, you know, as far, The Course in Miracles was a good book, and it's a gentle awakening, it says. Now, I'm not really sure what that means, but there was one woman, yeah, that did awaken from that, but there's different stages of awakening is what I'm hearing you say. But Edgar Tolle, Byron Katie, would you say that they are where Michael is? I mean, I don't know why, I just want to know, I'm curious. And what is he seeing? I mean, that's important to me, like, you know, what, does he see no world? I mean, obviously he saw you, but he sees that it's not himself and he's in joy and bliss. So there you go. Thanks, Regina. Now I got to get the mic down.
Yeah, like Nisargadatta, he says that he says he can't see a world because there is no world. In fact, I told him a story about an experience I had once when the identity with Regina disappeared for about 20 minutes. And I've shared this story here, so some of you may have heard it. And I was nobody. If you had come up and asked me, you know, who are you? I would have laughed and said, nobody. You know, I mean, that's who I was. I was nobody. And during that time, I was guided to the computer. I pulled up a biography on a lady named Regina Dawn Akers, and I read her biography. And I thought, I could kind of remember that I used to think I was her, and I thought it was the funniest thing in the world that I ever could have thought I was that character. It was clear to me that she was nothing, and it was so funny. So I told Michael that story. And he said, you know, Regina, someday you'll think it's the funniest thing in the world that you ever thought there was a world. I cannot comment on anyone. I can ask people, have you gone through the eye of the needle? Has the ego died its final death? And they can answer. I cannot know, because only someone who has passed through the eye of the needle themselves can fully recognize that. And in fact, in Michael's autobiography, which will be coming out soon, he talks about that. And he said, he gives one example. He says, for example, prior to his own awakening, he thought that Gangaji was awakened. That was someone he always looked up to as an awakened teacher. After his awakening, he realized she wasn't. He said that after you awaken is when that clarity comes. So those of us on this side of the eye of the needle cannot truly judge. All that we can do is increase our own desire for awakening, increase that, and that will bring us the clarity on which teachers to listen to, which ones not to listen to, or which things they say to listen to and which things they say not to listen to. And we have to follow our discernment. Sharon, he says he does not see form. And you can read about this. Again, think of the conscious movie screen speaking through the body, right? It's just speaking through the body. We're the one that sees the body. Now, he talks about this in his autobiography. You know, it's not, in some ways it's not, you know, he's not a writer. but his autobiography has a lot of good information in it. Yeah, Sharon, you're imagining that. You don't know that for a fact. You're imagining that because that's your perspective. You see? You don't know what he saw. Yeah. Another good book is Byron Katie's book, A Thousand Names for Joy. Byron Katie describes in her book how after she awakened, she no longer saw a world. And at first she thought other people were so funny because they thought there was a world. They thought there's a tree and there's a sky and they would even say things like have a good day, and she thought that was so funny because they thought there was such a thing as a day. And then she says later she learned that she had to say those things too. but she didn't see or experience those things. She learned to play a game, right? And Lynn is asking, Regina, was it more like consciousness speaking and being with consciousness? Yes. Yes, when he spoke, I did not feel that a man was speaking to me. I felt the universe was speaking to me. That was the feeling. Not that a man named Michael was speaking. The universe was speaking. And I can't comment on others, not only because I'm not awakened, but because I haven't been in their presence. And my feeling came from being in his presence. All right, we have lots of hands up. So waffles are going to be late today, Ron. Gloria, I don't know if your hand is still up, if you just didn't put it down, or if you have it up again. I think I saw dances in line before. I don't know, Gloria. I'll let go of the mic and see if you take it. Gloria, if you want it again, the mic is yours. All right, Gloria is not taking the mic, so dances, the mic is yours.
Hey guys, thanks. I was just going to read this real quick. This has to do with the hole that you were talking about. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Last one is, I walk down another street. So I did just want to say, I do want to say thank you. There's too much to share and not enough time at this point, but this is a lovely reminder. So thank you. Dropping the mic.
Yeah, that's a great story. And I would say that in that story, when the character says, it is my fault, that's the same as the certainty shift that I was speaking about. That's also obviously what A Course in Miracles is talking about, responsibility for sight. It is up to me. And I have absolute certainty on that now. And I did not before. That's the shift. And that changes everything. It changes everything. That's why I call it a shift. Again, Gloria's hand is up, but I'm not sure if she really wants the mic. I don't know how to tell. And Peggy, I saw your hand up. Okay, now Kathy's hand's up. So Kathy, I'm turning the mic to you.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for all the sharing. What came to me, one of the things that you said, honesty, and also a picture when you were reading from David Hemphill's about the whole story. I was putting together a kind of a cheesy piece of furniture that my sister-in-law's had picked up for my mother-in-law when I was visiting in South Carolina last week for a wedding. And one of the requests from the family was that it be put together. So it came in a box with instructions. And for any of you who have ever tried to put something together with the included instructions, sometimes if the instructions are pictured very well, explained very well, and all the pieces are in place, it goes together quite easily. We had three women working on this small piece of furniture, myself and my sister-in-law and her daughter, a set of young eyes, and three brains. And we kept looking at each other because what we noticed was that normally holes are supposed to be pre-drilled so that the screw can go into the hole very easily. Yet the hole was so tiny that none of us even noticed that the hole was there. And so, you can't screw something into a hole you don't even see. So we literally got a flashlight out knowing, something had to be there, but we just weren't seeing it. And so as that image came back to me, and eventually, yes, we did put the screws in the hole. But what I noticed was, you know, some of the screws went in a crooked way. They didn't go in easily. They didn't go in a way that flushed them within the hole. And, you know, it was taking way longer than we thought it would. And yet, you know, we ended up getting it together, and it's in a manageable form. It didn't have to be perfect. But what I was thinking also in relation to that was the pre-drilled hole. It's like it's not really a hole at all. The hole has been pre-drilled by the source itself. There's no hole that we can ever get into that has not been designed for my own awakening. And with self-honesty, you know, am I really doing everything that whatever teaching or instruction is asking me to do? Am I really doing it to the full extent of my willingness, or am I, you know, sloughing it off when something else as a distraction comes in and I just set it down and walk away to go to the distraction? So the combination of self-honesty combined with increased practice feels very appropriate, and I thank you for that reinforcement with this message today, and I'll give up the mic with that. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. And one of the things Michael said when I was with them is he said, I hope people listen when I ask them to find their way of increasing their desire for Manonessa, which we would call awakening. He says, I hope people listen when I ask them to find their way of increasing that desire. So just a couple things I want to say in closing. First of all, thank you very much for your enthusiasm. We're 20 minutes over right now, and that's strictly due to your enthusiasm. That's very encouraging to me. Thank you very much. I also want to say again, on May 1st and May 8th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here in the sanctuary, we will play the audios that came from my day with Michael. It will be audios of him and me talking. So you'll be able to come here and hear those audios. We'll announce that again. It will come out on daily updates and all of that. Also, when his book does come out, it's called Manonessa, A Spiritual Autobiography. It should be out in May. I do recommend reading it, and I do recommend contemplating his description of Manonessa, even though you won't be able to understand it. And also, when I post today's recording from the Sunday morning gathering, I will also post a link to the article I wrote the very next morning while everything was still fresh in my mind. And you can read that article. And again, Gloria, I don't know if your hand is still up or if it's only up in my perception or if you want the mic. I'll let go one more time to see if you want the mic again before I go to our closing song. Okay, I think her hand is probably just stuck up. So let me play our closing song. Again, I want to thank everyone very, very much for their enthusiasm. This is highly encouraging to me to see so many people enthusiastic about this topic. So here is the closing song. This is called Heart of Fire by Omkara. I think that my necessary activity now is to go. Len, I see your comment. And depending on how it's meant, it could be helpful or not helpful. That's all I'll say about it. Anyway, today is the first time Ron sat and listened to one of our weekly gatherings. So he heard about the new fire burning in me, which I think is very helpful. I don't know if he understood it, but he heard it. And now it's time for me to go eat waffles with him, because that's what we are to do. All right? Bye.